Welcome back into the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This is our national hour. We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kypreos, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. In the next few minutes, we'll welcome in Jeff Chychrun, who covers the Florida Panthers as a TV analyst, former NHLer, a roommate of mine with the Hershey Bears, won a Calder Cup in 1988. That means nothing to you guys back then.
That was the year I was born, Kippy.
Was it?
Yeah.
We just saw a glimpse of his office before
thanks,
he comes
Sammy.
On. Thanks. He's living right. That's all I got to say. Yeah. Your boy's doing well.
He is. All right, so as early as last week, I said, boys, where are the playoff races? We have no playoff races in the NHL.
Nothing.
And now with the work of Patrick Waugh in the island, your Islanders, JB, have been resuscitated.
Yes.
He applied the paddles to them.
He did.
The and Islanders, they are in a playoff spot.
Six straight wins. And the biggest thing about it all is it's not fool's gold. They no longer are spending all this time in their D zone. They're first or second in expected goals for. Like, they're doing things differently, and it's starting to work. So I'm a buyer of the Islanders, even though I already had plenty of stock. I'm buying more.
Here's who they had beaten, because you like to do this, I know.
Yes.
They beat the Stars in overtime.
Real team.
Beat the Red Wings, a team that they're directly chasing.
They're real.
They beat the Boston Bruins 5-1. They beat the St. Louis Blues 4-2. San Jose Sharks 7-2. And the Ducks 6-1. So there you go.
Not all fool's gold.
Nope.
You mentioned one of those losses to the Detroit Red Wings.
Oof.
They've also lost to Florida. They've also lost to Colorado, bad, 7-2. Arizona, 4-0.
The Red Wings? Yeah.
Vegas. That's the invitation.
Yeah, they let everyone back into it. Detroit did.
All right, as promised, Jeff Chychrun's going to join us from the lovely estate.
Oh.
Buddy, listen, whatever you say for the next 10 minutes or so, our guys won't hear a word of it because they're looking at all your memorabilia.
No, we're looking at the palm trees.
Off of the Zoom. You've got, 40-foot ceilings. For those of you that aren't watching right now, we've got Jeff Chychrun on Zoom, and it looks like the place you never want to leave.
Hi, Nick.
How are you, buddy?
You see the Bears jersey right there for you, buddy. I wanted to make sure you saw that one.
Yeah, we got a little bit of it. That has to be the playoff jersey where we did lose one game during the playoffs.
Lose a game.
12-0 to win the championship.
Yeah.
No big deal.
I'm not sure anybody's done that since. We were a pretty good group. Put a bunch of us back in the National Hockey League too, Nick, looking back.
Well, we know teams are more than welcome to try to tie it. We know you can't do better than it, which is an awesome feeling. So how are you, and how are things down south besides, your lovely home?
Yeah, thanks, buddy. We're really good here. Lucky enough to follow the Panthers around. Obviously, I follow the Sens a little bit too, which is a little bit tougher. That's why my hair is a little grayer these days. But we're good here. Thanks very much. Really enjoying the run. It was down at Panther practice this morning, and it's pretty jovial down there right now, I must admit.
Well, we're going to get into that, and we may ask you a little bit about the Sens as well. But first and foremost, what's it been like following the Panthers? It was almost a surreal moment watching Paul Maurice snap on the Toronto Maple Leafs last March on the bench. And since then, they've been the best team in the National Hockey League, in my opinion. It's phenomenal, the run that they've been on last year in the playoffs and how it's absolutely bled into the regular season. Just give us your thoughts of the way this team has turned around in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, it's been something, hasn't it? The buy-in, we're in a lot of rooms and they talk about the buy-in and you never know if it's a song and dance or, but everybody, it seems like every game post-game, there's someone mentions it. You know, the other day it was Kevin Stenland. It could be Matthew Tkachuk. It could be Barkov. Anthony Stolarz brings it up when you're talking to him. So there's something in that mix. But I'll never forget that game either, Nick. I think Mo actually, I think he turned it going, went a little postal on them. But, you know, it definitely was a turning point, or maybe it was just something that had to be said, because they do pride themselves so much in that. I believe it was a turnover by Carter Verhaeghe in the neutral zone that led to a goal, and they just don't seem to do those things very often. And but whatever it was, it certainly helped. But yeah, you know, they talked since Paul Maurice got here, and I talk about it till I'm blue in the face. The first practice he had there, he said we did a lot of stuff 3 feet from the boards, you know, sort of being on that right side of the puck, and playing what he would call the right way. And you know, they seem to live by that. And really, they're so deep now. They got three lines really that can score, it seems, and their energy line, centered by Kevin Stenlund. You got Lomberg and Cousins. But yeah, sort of long winded, Nikki. It's impressive how they've really come together in a period of time. But I do go back to, I was talking the other day, they had two runs with Bill Zito as the general manager against Tampa, and they lost the first one in seven games, lost the next year in round two before he brought in his guy. And I feel like this has definitely been learned behavior. Barkov's in his 11th year, Ekblad's in his 10th. So these are the guys they drafted to lead the franchise.
Yeah. So every time we turn on the highlights here, it seems like they're in a street fight with someone. You know, this is a team that's atop the Atlantic Division, but every other game it feels like it's just melee is going on. What part of that confrontational nature, how important is it to who they are that they have this element of combativeness?
Yeah, it's definitely competitive, right? I think Sam Bennett really does a lot to bring them into that fight and sort of lead by example in that regard, along with the skill level he brings. Obviously, Matthew Tkachuk, he's very good at stirring things up. But it's really a team toughness. I mean, even that fourth line, they've got Ryan Lomberg, who's feisty as can be, but, you know, not the biggest guy in the world. So it's really a sort of a team toughness thing, I think, or just, what do you call it? What type of aggression that they use as a group. And it's easy to back up sometimes too, when you know you either have a lead or you're confident enough to get that lead. So, you know, without taking the bad penalties, but I think they are pretty high in the league. They kill a lot of penalties. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know, but they do get in a lot of those, and perhaps it's the other team wanting to sort of stir it up physically, maybe try to get them off their game. But controlled aggression was a term I was looking for, with a lot of discipline.
We're talking to Jeff Chychrun, former NHLer, Panthers TV analyst. So, Chick, when we talk about the players like you just mentioned, Sam Bennett and Tkachuk, who drag you into the fight, who are the players on this roster that have maybe even surprised you, that maybe you didn't think had a willingness to be dragged into a fight that are now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you see everybody sort of getting, I think people were surprised. You know, I saw Oliver Ekman-Larsson for 5 years in Arizona as a parent teammate. And he doesn't, you know, there was not a big team out there the 5 years I was out there where my son played with him. And seemed like on a nightly basis, he had to defend himself. And he's very good with the pushback. You got Dmitry Kulikov on the back end, who's never afraid to sort of stick his nose in it. And Nick Cousins is another one. I think he's kind of well-known around the league. They just signed Gadjevich to a two-year deal, which he's really earned. Didn't have a lot going on. I think he was actually hurt in training camp. But everybody, you know, everybody sort of sticks their nose in. Sam Reinhart's not afraid to, you know, get involved physically if someone gives him a push or as he's driving the net. So I don't know if anybody surprises me. And if I look at it, Brandon Montour is another one that plays a pretty skilled yet pretty tough brand of hockey on the blue line. Maybe goes a little bit understated. But again, it's overall kind of, it's a mentality, I guess, right, with the group. And And maybe that's part of their plan too, Nick. When they get on the ice, they want to see if they can goat the other team into a bad one for a couple minutes. But it's interesting to watch.
So just on that topic, I got to ask you about Nick Cousins, easily the most hated guy in the league this year. So I haven't watched enough to understand that. Is he beloved by his teammates, or are there sometimes a few nights when even a teammate can go, would you knock it off?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, he plays up and down the roster too. I'm not even sure from where I stand. I mean, I watched that game in Arizona, and he got drilled from behind. And I, you know, sort of look at the play. I can't remember the defenseman's name, had the mask. But I didn't think he looked terribly upset, but then he just got drilled from behind, missed quite a bit of time. Yeah, I think he is. He's the guy that he definitely, you know, plays up and down the lineup. He played on the second line for a couple of weeks there. They took Rodriguez off the first line. Verhaeghe went up, and he sort of substituted in there for a little bit till they filled that hole with Tarasenko. I believe he is pretty loved. Does a lot of – he sits beside Matthew Tkachuk in the practice facility, I noticed, there today, and I think they got a pretty good thing going with him.
Jason Zucker?
Yes, Jason Zucker. No, who was the defenseman?
Good Branson.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that one.
There's a few on his list.
Well, they're adding up now.
So they had a quiet deadline. They added Vlad Tarasenko. How did that make them better? Do you think it's a fit for what this team needed?
Yeah, so if you listen to Bill Zito, I think it's a real fit. It was impressive on Saturday, I'll tell you. Two goals, a helper, could have had three. Thing I noticed about him, when he came from St. Louis, I heard it from a St. Louis Blue that they didn't think Vladdy wanted the puck until, you know, he sort of exited the defensive zone sort of came through the middle of the ice. And what I saw in Ottawa could have been the complete opposite. I mean, I thought he was really responsible in his own zone. I thought he really worked hard to get down low to support the defenseman and did a lot of things on the other side of the puck that really impressed me. He was plus 13 on that Ottawa roster, which he might've been leading the club when he was traded. So when you translate that and you come to this team here and all of a sudden he's playing with Barkov and Reinhardt, the first game he was okay. He'd flown all night to get here. Then the other day it was lights out, little chemistry. I didn't realize Tarasenko's father and Barkey's father played together many years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was brought up the other day. So Fitz, I think it was very economical trade. They didn't pay a big price to get him, I don't think. And no players left the room. He was very concerned about disrupting the apple cart and the emotion of that locker room. Added Tarasenko and Okpozo without anybody leaving. So, yeah, I think it could be a really good fit. He's got that, obviously, the Stanley Cup pedigree. Wants to win. His family he had bought a place here in Weston, Florida, a year ago. So his family stayed here all year. I know he had an older boy who was in Ottawa, I believe, was playing minor hockey there. But, yeah, so I think there's a lot of positives with him there.
Hey, Jeff, when we often hear the term best player in the world, names are dropped, McDavid, McKinnon, Matthews, but seldom do we hear Barkov's name. Like, you watch him every day.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of people that don't. How good is he when you want to compare him to the great centers in our game?
Right. Is he ever? Like, I know he was that number two pick, I believe, behind McKinnon that year. But he's got that big frame. He takes a lot of the defensive zone faceoffs, right? But that big frame, he creates so many outnumbered situations because he's able to carry defenders with him and force an open lane. Whether he's on the power play or regular shift, but he is that special talent, the way he skates and gets up and down the ice. Really unselfish too. You see a lot, he's not shooting the puck. I wish he'd shoot the puck more. if someone's open, he loves to set them up. But yeah, the little things that he does, for a big man, you give that a la Bobby Clark, that sort of fake, and then you throw that cross ice backhand sauce across ice to a streaking, Reinhardt or whoever's going. Vision is excellent. Really humble superstar. And you're right, Nick. I think his presence is really understated in the league. And it's funny, we had this conversation on set on Saturday. I think too many of us throw best player in the league out there, one of the top three in the world out there all the time, because it's easy to say at the moment. But he is a special talent. I wish everybody had a little more availability to watch him play and appreciate what he does. Matches up against all the big guys in the world, for sure.
So you mentioned that Tarasenko came from Ottawa, which, not a lot of great plus minuses out there. But one thing that is going well, your boy's fifth on the team in points this year. He's, as dynamic as usual, 9 goals on the season. How would you qualify this Sens season, not just for him, but the Sens in general? What has gone on this year to make it such an unusual year?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I tend to still think they're a young group.
Mm-hmm.
And I preface that by saying, my son talks about Claude Giroux all the time, and he's cherishing the time that he's had to spend with him. Jacob was fortunate to have a very veteran group in Arizona on the blue line. Ekman Larson, Jalmerson, Demers, Skaligoski, and such. But I think I don't know where it went off the rails. Because they started off, the preseason was incredible. And I know that's completely different than the regular season. And then, they had some really big victories early in the year. And I'm not sure. I think, maybe obviously on the defensive side of the puck, there was some gray area, I think, structurally and systematically that I don't think everybody was always on the same page, just looking at it from where I was, and some things needed to be addressed. And I do believe, as I look at the Panthers, I mean, they're in like year 5 of what they were trying to accomplish. And I just think it takes time sometimes, and they're winning is learned behavior, and to get to that point on a nightly basis is difficult. I think one thing, if I could look back at it, I think the line shuffling and the defensive combinations changing so much has really hurt them. But that's, that's not for me to decide. It's I guess whoever's available on any given night. But I don't know. I think I was on a podcast the other day and I said it'd be really neat to see where this team is come October, because, they've, I think there's an opportunity there for them to really turn things around quickly. I do believe that. I think, obviously they struggled in net for a bunch of the season as well. So, but those are, everybody goes through those things. So I don't know. There's a lot of things to put your finger on and we'll see where they go from here.
Jeff, I'm sure Jacob heard all the rumors about his name being out there again in Ottawa. He already experienced it in Arizona. He's smart enough to understand it's big business. He still has a contract that may be very attractive to other teams. But how was the experience that he went through in Arizona helping him deal with that, at least up until Friday?
Right. I think they were completely different. And I think he was, going through it in Arizona obviously helped him. Now that was different. He requested a trade in Arizona. So then you land in Ottawa with really 2 years left in your deal, something was going to come up, right? So your name's going to be out there and it hasn't changed. And I don't know when it will, I guess until you either sign an extension or you are moved. That's just sort of the way of today's game. And they've got some great defenseman locked up for a long time. So we'll see the way it all pans out. But I really appreciate how he prepares himself to play on a nightly basis. And I think he just tried to put his head down and have at it. It's really tough when the team's not winning. And I believe that's his obviously number one goal is, you know, the wins and W's and get in the playoffs. It was part of the reason for wanting to come east. But it's tough. I really hope they're not that far off. But yeah, the trade deadline, obviously, I don't see how it couldn't affect any individual, quite frankly. But I thought he did a pretty good job of sort of blocking it out.
Well, Jeff, we really appreciate your time, man. What do you got, a tee off time in about
I am playing a pick. I don't tell anybody because I'm doing the Panthers Dallas tomorrow, too. So I'm looking forward to that.
A life down south. Jeff Chychrun, thanks for doing this, pal.
Hey, thanks for calling, guys. Great talking to you.
Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Panthers TV analyst, Jeff Chychrun.
Kippy, I say this to you a lot.
Yeah. What are you doing?
What are you doing here? Like, you should be with down there covering the Panthers.
This is the Matt Damon speech from Good Will Hunting. Yeah. Listen, you're failing us all being here.
Yeah. Sure, I could be having a cold one on the ninth hole right now, but being here with you, Sammy.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you
have an obligation to the hockey world to educate you a little bit.
Thanks, Kippy. Thank you. Thank you.
Looks like a pretty good life he's got down there. But yeah, listen, fun team to follow too.
I think it was Elliot on Hockey Night in Canada spoke of like the push towards the South, players wanting to go there, no state tax. We're seeing a push now.
It's always had no tax and warm weather, but now you're a good team and people go, okay, let's go.
They asked Gadjevich about his contract extension. He signed a 2-year and he said, it's Florida, baby, was his exact words.
No one's ever going, it's Columbus, baby.
What's still probably being a little underspoken of, if that's a word, is...
I don't think it is.
...that it's only going to get worse and tougher for certain markets. As the cap goes up, so does the savings for teams like Vegas, Florida, and it becomes even a greater tool than it does today. We're talking about the difference, $10 to $15 million to sign free agents now. Teams in Canada cannot compete with that.
Listen. Here in Canada, we already have a little bit of an inferiority complex about it, but we love the scrappy underdog role. Now we're just going to play with a lower cap than the rest of the league.
Awesome.
Here we go. Break this 30-year drought.
I don't know what the answer is, and well, I'm not here to suggest
joke,
that there is.
There should be some sort of equity,
I'm starting to buy into you.
Like a percentage of whatever, you know, they should take state tax into consideration for how much you can
spend. I don't know how you do it.
You get to pick one contract. You went off the books.
You've won me over on that.
Yeah,
because it's going to get uglier as the cap goes over $100 million.
And you've heard people and agents talk about what you can do in Canada to shelter your money, to get it later, to protect. But then, you see what Tavares is going through and what Batista went through, and it's just like, I'll just avoid the hassle and just go to the place where it's cheaper. I do think it is something the league needs to seriously consider.
Yeah, will I go to Florida and have a chance to win? Or and have no one tax me and no one accost me or talk to me about hockey, or go to Toronto and be taxed and be accosted and not win.
Hunter Dewar likes it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember when I played, and I want to say early 90s, that they had a program for Canadian teams. It was like an equalization program that played off the American dollar.
Oh, yeah. But now it's all in the American dollar, the cap.
No, yeah, it is. But the rate of return was a huge disadvantage to Canadian teams. And I'm not going to pretend I know how it played
You're
out.
Saying it's possible to consider
these
things.
But I'm saying, is there now an equalization program that we can add moving forward that could just, I don't know, tip the scales more favorable for markets like New York, California, and Canada.
Yeah. I actually, throwing in the other states that are highly taxed is a reasonable point too.
But this isn't, to me, this is not, it's not even a CBA thing. This is the owners getting together and going, okay, what do we do?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the rich owners with the no state tax going to the ones that don't have it, Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, no one's helping him out. It's not coming from the owner's help, I don't think.
I mean, they have a smaller cap, the non-tax teams. I mean, so the Floridas.
Yeah.
Vegas, isn't that, aren't they some tax breaks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And they've just traded for Hanifin.
Hurdle. Mantha.
Yeah, but Hanifin's unique here because everything was pointing to the direction that he's a Boston guy. He wants to get back to the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And last time I checked, Vegas wasn't close to the East Coast.
No. Nope.
But they can check off boxes. Number one is he's out of Canada. Number two, it's warm weather. Mm-hmm. And number three, no state tax.
I heard that Tomas Hertl immediately, by getting traded from California to Nevada, saves $6 million in taxes.
Oh,
gets to keep an extra $6 million.
Yeah, like how is that?
I told you, like UFAs could be looking at $15 million
if you do
in difference.
The big deal.
We just got a great suggestion on the text line: lower the taxes in Canada.
Great idea by this guy.
I don't know who it is that texted, but that's an excellent suggestion.
So Hanifin could resign if he doesn't care so much about just being on the East Coast. And he doesn't have to sign $7.5 million to equal the same amount of money he could have gotten in Calgary. That's huge for a team that's already looking like they've...
Yeah.
Finding loopholes in the system.
There's some attention on Vegas right now between the long-term IR, salary cap, and the tax stuff.
And it'll pass, and nothing will change.
Right.
Correct.
You're correct.
Right. Yeah. And they'll be hoisting the cup, and people will be mad, and they won't care.
I'm not convinced of that.
Neither am I. The West is an absolute, it's a disaster to get through there, but I think there's a chance there could be.
A lot of people cheering against Vegas in the first round. Sure.
I won't be one of them.
No, the Knights guy here.
I won't dare wear that on TV during the playoffs.
No.
But maybe.
You want to go to your game time?
Yeah, we'll rip game time here. Let me get my read ready here. It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I was looking at the futures here because the playoff stuff got a little bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of the Eastern Conference that we were talking about off the top of the hour here. So the Detroit Red Wings, who would have been prohibitive favorites to make the playoffs before their long stretch, Vegas still thinks that they have a chance to make the playoffs, a pretty good chance, minus 145.
Detroit?
Yeah, minus 145, plus 115 to miss. I'm looking down here. The Tampa Bay Lightning are minus 400 to make. And they are plus 300 to miss. So they think they're a pretty big favorite to make.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Capitals, who are also in that race, are a huge favorite to miss.
Yeah.
They're at minus 600 to miss, plus 400 to make it. And your New York Islanders, Borny, are minus 200 to make it, plus 160 to miss it.
I'm shocked.
So I don't really know where the value is in all those, but let me have it.
Go ahead. What was the Detroit to miss?
Detroit to miss was plus 115.
I like your getting money there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty good spot. The Washington, I can't believe they're minus 600 to miss.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of Capitals fans tell me the Capitals are going for it today. Deadline, they just cut off the dead wood, addition by subtraction, look out for the Caps. So we'll see if that's just my mentions or reality.
An alumnus of the Capitals, certainly be nice to see them get in.
Yep.
Personally for me, but I just look at that roster and I'm like, they're swimming upstream.
They're thin.
Here is what I was told today. By the way, it's just a bunch of fans. It's not any like heavy, hard hitting inside stuff, but they're saying get rid of Kuzi, who's been a problem. Well, Kuznetsov there, Edmondson, Mantha, who was inconsistent. You can make some room for this Lapierre, who's playing well, and Fever, Harry's coming back. I don't know, guys. They believe in the team still down
Lapierre,
there.
Lapierre.
And Ovi's getting hot, right?
McMichael and Strome. Those are your centermen. I mean,
I'm not a Caps guy. I think they're missing. So
hey, it'd be great if they,
Ovi's
you want to talk about
16.
The unknowns.
They play tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. They are pretty favorable underdogs. Plus 180 in Winnipeg. We'll play Rick Bonus's thoughts on his team's effort from Saturday night after they got starched by the Canucks mm-hmm. on the Hockey Night in Canada. They are minus 220 at home. If you like them, to me, that's a great spot for a -1.5 at plus 125. Feels like that's a big bounce back spot after their coach absolutely blasted them. And Barney, your Islanders looking to stay red hot in LA tonight to take on the Kings. They are plus 120. So
big dogs. Good.
No, not huge, but a big dog looking decent value for a team that's on a 6-game heater here going up against the Kings, who I don't think are perfect. So there's a couple looks for tonight. And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, let's take a quick break because we've got some nice topics of conversation in our NHL news and notes.
Yeah.
Including the Wild pulling their goalie in overtime to get an extra point.
Love it.
We've got Tortorella suspended and fined. Oh, let's put on our surprise faces for that one.
Can we talk Kyle Clifford too?
And a Kyle Clifford story of old time hockey at its finest. There you go, Sammy. That and more when we return on Real Kipper and Bourne.
Everything Raptors before and after the games. The Raptor Show with Will Liu. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Just prior to the break, we were talking Minnesota Wild in a look that we have ever seen since the inception of overtime, where a team pulls their goalie in this situation, it was a 3-3 tie.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up winning on a Boldy goal for a 4-3 win.
Yep.
But it had a lot of people scratching their heads on the gamble of pulling the goalie to try to win a game in overtime.
Truth serum. Did you both know that that was the rule?
Okay, hold on. Let's just speak of the rule because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are listening right now that don't know the rule.
Yeah.
And the rule that you're speaking of is if you pull the goalie and your opposing team scores in the empty net, you lose the extra point that you had earned going into overtime.
I did know, and I'm shocked how many people didn't know.
Didn't know.
You didn't know.
It's one of those things where...
You didn't know.
No, I knew, but it's been so long that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and then it's like, oh my God. Like, think about it. We've had this rule for like 20 years. It's never come up.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I think they probably anticipated that it would happen a lot more than it has.
Well, yeah, I think that rule has been a deterrent, but why would we want to deter this?
So I didn't hear any of the post-game comments. My first thought was, did the Wild know this rule?
Yes, they did.
They did.
I mean, absolutely did.
So, and they still wanted to risk the point.
They need every point. They are 6 points out of a playoff spot.
I have the quote from John Hines here. We need 2 points, Hines said. 1 point, 0 points, it's not doing us any good. 2 points, that's what we need.
Okay, but you either score it with a goalie still in, mm-hmm. or you get to a shootout, you still have an opportunity to get that point.
This is full desperation, baby. What I like about this.
So, I don't understand. What are you saying? We suck at 3-on-3, or I have no faith in my goalie in a shootout?
Well, we just want to take our chances of having a 4-on-3 on a power play, and we think it's going to help us score before you do.
I don't. Listen, it turned out great.
Do I think it's a good idea?
It turned out great. It was a hell of a gamble.
It really was. Big gamble. But, I mean, I love his point that it's like you pull the goalie in the game when you think you're going to lose the game. You don't care if you get scored on again. For them, if they get 0 points, the season's over. So what are we not you know, pulling out all the stops here for. It's a meta pull. They pulled the goalie on the season.
Yeah, and I think 4-on-3 is a much bigger advantage than 6-on-5.
I would agree.
Way more ice.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's like if you took the percentages of 4-on-3 power
scores,
play goals.
30% of the time?
It's higher. I think it's higher.
Is it? Maybe 35, something like that. But yeah, it's a big risk.
Are we all under the agreement, though, if in fact the Preds were able to score in the empty net, we would be ripping them beyond belief for losing the point that you had in your back pocket?
I don't think
so. I fully put my hand up.
Yeah.
I would absolutely rip them.
I'd be going.
You threw away a point that you could have used. Maybe it's a point that cost you a playoff spot at the
end. Minnesota has a lot of games played. They only have 17 games left. They have to make up 6 points after getting 2 points. So they would have had to make up 7 if they had got 1 point or 8. To me, it's like if they're sincere about a playoff chase, this was crucial. And so I think I could have defended it. I don't know if I would have. I think I would have. I think I would have.
I think it's a stupid rule.
It's a stupid rule. I'll give you that. Because
I don't really get.
If you pull your goalie, the other team has like a 60% chance of scoring and you have a 40% chance.
Like you earned. No, here's the thing. To me, the rule is the rule. You've fought all the way through a NHL game where the NHL has deemed it good enough for you to get a point. Whereas like that, to me, if you're tied with the other team, is worth a point. Why the hell should it matter what you do in the 3-on-3? Like to me, that doesn't make any sense. It's a weird, stupid rule, in my opinion.
I think you're right.
Right? Like, it's like, what is it?
He's won me over.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
Has that ever happened on our show?
Like maybe 3 times.
Yeah.
Tops. But I don't get it at all. But whatever.
Yeah, go nuts. Pull your goalie.
Oh, you're writing the date down there,
Kipper?
Yeah,
I'm going to write the date down. March 11th.
Yeah.
At 5:42 Eastern.
And we'll see if it happens with the
Sammy
increasing
McKee
frequency. Maybe
said
gets
something
a raise or something. I don't know.
Really smart.
Love
okay,
it.
Okay, we got a lot to get to.
Just kind of a follow-up. A week ago, Toronto versus the Rangers, there was like 7 seconds left. Mitch Marner was going to go down the ice on a scoring opportunity to win the game in overtime, and the Rangers took a too many men penalty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes.
So another one of those head scratching.
They threw an extra guy on the ice.
Did you know the rule of awarding a penalty shot if it's deemed?
Yeah.
Deliberate.
I'm going to go ahead and give you the truth again. No.
Didn't know that one either.
In overtime, if the other team takes a penalty late in overtime or just in overtime in general, the ref has the discretion to call a penalty shot, which they took away a rush from the Leafs.
Yes.
Probably a 2-on-1, was it?
Yes.
For the chance to win the game.
Yeah.
Why not throw an extra guy over the boards every time and sniff that out?
I'm with you.
Not going to give up a penalty shot.
I'm with you. If it's the last 20 seconds, throw seven guys out there.
Throw the whole team over.
All right, boys.
Oh, no, two-minute penalty.
Fire drill, boys. Let's go.
5 seconds to go.
Throw your stick out. Yes.
But that's why I guess the rule's there, because they want to avoid that.
Got to allow it. And so the ref.
But in this
the
instance.
The ref either didn't think of the rule or he's a coward.
Or it kind of blended in, though, for a line change a little bit. So there was a little bit
but
of a gray area.
But if you're saying it's too many and they're taking away the rush, I think you got to call a penalty shot.
No, I'm with you.
All right.
I'm with you.
We're all very agreeable.
The agree show today. What do you want to do?
Tortorella.
Okay.
Tortorella. Suspended 2 games. Like, we knew there would be a fine coming.
50K is a lot, boys. Holy
two games.
Smokes.
How about the Philadelphia Flyers? I don't know if this is their CEO that just said, we'll pay it. We'll pay it. We'll
said,
pay
I love
anything.
That he's, we, you know, we all bleed orange or whatever. Like, we're going to have his back like he had ours. Culture.
It's a dumb league.
But the players don't get that same benefit when they do something on the ice. You got to pay that fine yourself.
Maybe if they're sticking up for each other like this, they do.
No. That's circumvention of the salary cap.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Can I ask you that Tortorella standing on the bench screaming at one of Gary's beloved henchmen? Is refusing to go to the locker room. is worth two games and $50,000, but Jacob Trouba literally slashing a guy in the head is worth $5,000.
Yeah, you're apples and oranges here. You just, there's just, no, there's nothing to compare, Sammy. Yeah, zero.
I think it's Bush League from Torts, though, by the
way.
This
is so out of the box.
Yeah.
I'll give you the equivalent of Tortorella. I get a 2-minute penalty and I refuse to go in the box.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes while we all sit here with what? Our thumbs up, our you know what?
Okay.
Right? You just can't have a guy shut down the game for 10 minutes because he's having a temper tantrum.
And while I don't think two games is, you know, it seems like a lot or whatever, I do think you have to send a message to all the other coaches that, like, there's repercussions if you want to do what Torts did. If Torts was allowed to do that and they give him a fine that the CEO pays, which, by the way, the CEO saying he would pay that before any sort of ruling came out probably hurt Torts because they had to do something to punish Torts, right?
Added another 25 grand?
No, just I think probably maybe another game. Like to say, we don't care who's paying this, but also you have to miss games now.
As I think it's a big time. As Mariah said that I was liking Torts, kind of back.
But didn't Torts just want the ref to come talk to him?
Sorry?
Torts just wanted the ref to talk to him. He wasn't trying to like get an answer, right? Yeah, he wanted the guy to come to the bench.
He was being so reasonable.
No one was
pointing his broken finger at him the whole time.
Do we know what happened, by the way?
He just hated the call.
He broke his finger? No, I mean his broken
thumb.
Situation.
Is it a thumb? What is it?
I don't know.
It's a bad look. Just go to the locker room, bud. You're down 4-0, hit the showers. It's a bad look.
I agree.
So the comment that you just said moments ago about hating Torts again, that's the beauty of Torts. Is that you can love him and hate him. It's just never happening at the same time.
It's like Willie Nylander. You don't get to enjoy the offense with not getting the defense as well. This part comes with this part.
But I think he adds so much. Like, the Flyer fans have not felt this kind of, I don't know, passion.
They're
he brings passion into everything
Give
he does.
Keith Jones credit. Since the moment he 100%. Got hired, this feels like they're trying to be the Flyers again.
Which I couldn't respect more.
Yeah.
Love Jonesy. Love Danny Briere.
Didn't trade Konechny. They, you know, they kept their...
They've brought them back to life.
Yeah.
We've lost two of our favorite guests to big jobs who've done great at them.
Talk
and Keith Jones. Seems like they're good at what they do. I was, you know, we were going to mention Rempe and... You know, who's going to have to fight a big mutant tonight. But we are on Vancouver. We should probably talk about how they lost starting goalie for...
He's had a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Demko, out of the lineup, did they say...
I'm laughing because it's an obvious thing.
What did they exactly say? I did not see the latest report on it.
I just saw that he was out a month. I don't think we have anything more than that, do we? Any more
Did
details?
They say specifically lower body or, I mean, I don't expect much more than that.
The reality for the Canucks here is, you know, this is a team that really, I want to see these, you know, post-trade deadline, see it come together and believe that they can hang with these teams, with Colorado who made big additions and Vegas that made the big additions, you know, dismiss a pretty good goaltender. And I think he can keep them in there, but this is a crucial time from them, you know, for...
Yeah, 3 to 4 weeks with a knee injury.
Is that what it is?
With
a
knee injury?
Yeah, that's not what you want to hear.
Big stretch of hockey coming up.
You know, between Demko now and in Vancouver and Mitch Marner in Toronto, like, these are those type of injuries that you got to be so careful with. Because you don't want them bleeding into a playoff scenario.
What do
where,
we think Marner's is? Do we know?
Listen, Marner landed awkwardly. I mentioned that the other day to you.
It's a weird fall.
He had a weird fall, which means to me that he tweaked his knee or he's got a sprain.
On the other hand,
an ankle sprain
with these guys,
or he tweaked something.
Hope it's not an ankle sprain because those are no joke. I think for both these guys, let's say they come out okay, like they're 3-4 weeks, they're good to go or whatever the time frame is. They're both guys who are crucial and play a lot of time. One of those things where you're like, if you get through it okay, maybe the break right now is not the worst thing if you're looking for a deep playoff.
That terrifies me for a goalie, though.
That's if you heal it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And very seldom do guys go in 100%, even with their wear and tear. groins are the worst.
Is this, sorry, for Marner, though, is it more longer time frame, you think, than
listen, he did finish the game that he played the other night in Boston, which lends to you saying, how serious can it be? Because he did play, but I don't think he played a ton in the third period, but he played. So it's it's one of those nagging, whatever it is, he can feel it enough to warrant going to the trainers and saying something's not right. So these guys, they get their MRIs right away. They know exactly what they're dealing with, and it's just a matter of what the doctor says. Week, 10 days, 2 weeks, or 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the severity.
So the Canucks beat up on the Jets the other night, and we have a clip from Rick Bowness talking about the Jets, right?
We do have that clip.
That was just ugly.
Would you like to hear what the head coach had to say about it?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's play it.
The bottom line is that's the worst game we have played in my 2 years here, by far, because we didn't have one player play a good game, not one. So it starts there, and it ends there. It's as simple as that.
So none of this was on the Canucks?
Oh, yeah, they played a great game, but it's the same team we came in here 3 weeks ago and played, so that's on us. We didn't have one player play a good game, so it starts there.
When you did the line blending,
the line blending, nothing. We had nobody going. It's that simple. Don't overanalyze anything other than that. It's the worst game we've played in the 2 years I've been here, and we didn't have one player play well. So line blending had absolutely nothing to do with anything.
Can't make a good smoothie out of running shoes and dirt, and blend him anyway.
I love that man.
What I love about him is that he's so notorious for being this, like, beloved, kind, soft-spoken guy. But when his team's bad, he says
No protecting. Just calls it. You know, with him, though, he's not saying anything that they haven't already heard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is the key for any head coach.
Love Rick
Bonus. No surprises through the media. Casey DeSmith. Is okay for you guys?
Mm.
I think he's all right.
He's had 19 starts this year. He's got a 280 goals against, a 900 save percentage, 911 career. They can survive with him in net.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just...
If there's consistency in their game and they look like the team before they went into their small little funk, I think they should be fine.
They have a pretty hearty lead, and they're 10 points up on the Oilers. Oilers have 3 games in hand. But, you know, you're getting to that point of the schedule where you just run out of games at some point.
Last thing we'll mention, Madison Square Garden tonight, Devils, Rangers. Believe
you're teeing up a fight. Are you promoting fighting on the Real Kipper
Violence?
And Bourne show?
Yes. The last time we saw the Devils and Rangers play, Rempe turned Bastion into the extra from a war movie. So... there might be some repercussions tonight, considering they traded for Curtis McDermott of Sauble Beach, Ontario.
Listen, I don't bet, but can I put money down on a fight?
I don't think you can, pal.
No, but there's going to be one, I think.
How can there not be?
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't trade for Curtis McDermott to
not fight him.
Yeah.
To not fight him.
Speaking of, fit this in real quick. So Kyle Clifford gotten a little hullabaloo with plays for the Marlies. Guy who played on the Marlies was on the other team. Kid scores a goal. Sorry, I should mention, the kid quit the Marlies with 3 games to go or something the season last year, and they missed playoffs by a point or two.
Yeah, it was like he didn't play in a win and get in game.
Scores against the Marlies, goes down the bench and pumps it out, celebrates.
Right by the bench.
Right by the bench.
Which is a no-no in any era.
Yeah, next shift, Kyle Clifford just chased the kid around. Good old-fashioned. The kid went full turtle. It really looked like a scene out of the 1990s.
Like, you're underselling full turtle.
Oh, it's the worst turtle I've ever seen.
I've never seen someone stay in the shell so long after the violence.
This
happening.
Guy was in the ice deeper than the Canadian coin at the Olympics.
How about Clifford? Down there, 2 cups, down there,
just
grinding
cares,
away, caring, hockey guy through and through, hockey lifer. Love it. My boy Cliffy.
There you go.
There was our violent portion of the show.
All right, how many games on
4.
Tap?
4 games.
4. Pick your game. Enjoy it. We're back tomorrow on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Our thanks to Jeff Chychrun for joining us. Give us a rating and review if you get a chance. Have a great night, everybody.